The Honorable Judges of the United States Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit. Oyez, 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 all persons holding any manner or form of business before the Honorable of the United States Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit are admonished to draw nigh and give their attendance. The Court is now seated. God save the United States of America.
Good morning. We're happy to hear argument in our first case, number 09-1496, United States versus Bailey. Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Your Honors, this case involves one of the oldest powers of established government and one that has been protected against.
The exception of this case should be United States versus Currency, right?
Yes, that's correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
147,000.
I thought we substitute a new case in for me. But okay, I'm with you.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
No, we're all set. Go ahead.
Your Honor, what I was saying is, in this case, it involves a power of the government that's one of the most exceptional powers of the federal government, which is the power to seize assets of an individual for an allegation of a connection to a criminal activity or criminal behavior. This case comes before Your Honors on the grant of summary judgment to the plaintiff, to the government, for my client's $147,900 in U.S. currency. And what I'd like to focus on, Your Honor, is viewed in the light most favorable to my client, the facts as were shown to the judge would establish that a reasonable jury could find, if it so chose, for my client. And I'd like to focus on the two prongs of these types of cases. First, it's clear in a case of forfeiture that it's the government's burden to prove that the alleged illegal currency or the currency traceable has a substantial connection to some alleged criminal activities. This case arises out of two alleged incidents that the government contends are criminal activities that show a continuing criminal enterprise by my client. The first allegedly occurred back in 2001. My client, who is unfortunately currently deceased, owned property with a
lot of... What error do you think did the court make as to the first prong? Why do you think maybe... What was your argument that it is an error?
Yes, Your Honor. I believe the error as to the first prong is the court didn't consider evidence in the most favorable to the non-moving party that there's substantial evidence that first, the alleged criminal activity was not actually criminal activity traceable to my client and that there was insufficient evidence of such. And secondly, that if there was any alleged criminal activity that was verifiable, it was so small that it couldn't be traceable in quantity to the amount of assets that were seized in this case. And, Your Honor, I believe the most compelling, if you would call it that, evidence by the government of a criminal activity is the secondary event, when they had a confidential informant allegedly purchased 5 pills, prescription drug pills, from my client. Now, although I understand it's not determinative, it is important to note that neither of the alleged criminal activities led to a conviction or a charge or a plea or anything regarding my client. But more importantly, Your Honor, what was shown and alleged by the confidential informant is that 5 pills of alprazolam were traded for some goods that were alleged to be stolen by the confidential informant. The street value of those pills is roughly $30. They found a prescription bottle, I believe it was unmarked, filled with 15 more alprazolam pills. The current street value of the entirety of the alleged illegal drugs in my client's home is roughly $120.
Was there any marijuana found?
That was in 2001, I believe, Your Honor. And where that was found, and this is important, it appears from the brief it would be easy to assume that the marijuana was found in my client's home or somewhere with scales, et cetera. The truth of the matter is the marijuana and scales was found in an outbuilding on the very edge of my client's large acreage property with an unsecured building, with an unsecured door, in a refrigerator.
Is that the same building where the cash... The large cash was found, or is that a different
place? No, it was a different place, Your Honor. In fact, the large cash was found outside the main residence in a safe, again, some years later. And I think, Your Honor, the problem here is the traceability. It is clear, and it doesn't seem that the court gave weight to the fact that at least roughly $51,000 of this currency has a ship date where it would be longer, in some cases up to 50 years, than the expected life of a $100 bill for this currency to be used in a drug transaction. And what I believe the court looked at was, there's some statements made by my client where he says he doesn't recall ever replacing bills when he dug them up.
No. His deposition testimony is clear on that. that might not be the end of it, but he's asked all sort of six ways to Sunday, if he ever replaced him, if he ever changed him. No, he takes them out, he counts them, he puts them back in the rubber bands, he puts them back in never different bills. That doesn't necessarily do in your argument with respect to the 40% of them that were not barred by that time span. But there are sports, there are six, it certainly is not the case that every single one of them could have been, of those particular bills, that he never did any replacement bills, could have been his inheritance from his father. That's just impossible.
Your Honor's correct. It's impossible that bills that were printed and shipped after 1994, the date of his father's death, could have been the result of an inheritance. And it is true that there is a line of questioning in the deposition where he answers very clearly in the manner you suggest. What I believe, however, is there are sections of the deposition in the record and in the joint appendix which go largely unremarked on by the district court judge. For example, in page 221 of the joint appendix, he's asked by Ms. Clower, of the $147,900, or let's say the $149,000 that you say is seized, how much of that was money you had gotten from your dad or inherited from your dad? And his answer is that was still part of that money. How much of it was that money? And the answer on lines 11 and 12 are important to my next argument. He doesn't just say, well, part of it was the Mustang. He says, well, I had fixed up some cars and stuff, but that was the money I had got from him. Further, Your Honors, on page 227 of the same deposition.
But he does say that, but he never ties that up. He tells us in another instance that the money there, every single dollar of the money that's buried was inherited.
Your Honor, I understand that. And being at the deposition and listening to Mr. Bailey testify at the time, it's clear that there's some potential inconsistencies in his testimony. But in a summary judgment motion, Your Honor, it's clear that the questions of credibility are things...
Not a question of credibility. Your client said in his deposition, page 247, line 21, so those 14 stacks of $100 bills, by the way, let me add inside. This is, they're clearly talking about the money found in that safe that was buried underground. So those 14 stacks of $100 bills, that was strictly from your dad, right? From your inheritance, right? That's a fact. That is the fact, your client. That is the fact on where that money came from. There's no other disputing that. That's the fact you have to deal with.
I agree, Your Honor, that
you can't argue an alternative theory or anything else. That may be a theory you have. That's not what your client said.
But what I would argue, Your Honor, and I agree with you that my client testified unequivocally at points under oath that the money that was seized, $147,000, was the inheritance from his father. I also agree with Your Honor that there's no question that that is not possible, that the whole amount is from his father. I agree with you. What I would say is, if you look at my client's deposition...
No, you understand. That fact is established for the purposes of your client's summary. It is an established fact that your client's position is that every dollar came from the inheritance. And that just cannot be true. It just is not physically, actually possible. But he's stuck by that fact.
You concede that, counsel? Did your client say that every bill in there was given to him by his father? Or did it was based on inheritance?
I believe my client testified that the money that Judge Shedd is referring to, $147,000, the stacks, was from his father's inheritance.
All right. Is that inconsistent with so you just concede that, let's say your father dies and then 10 months later you liquidate assets from that inheritance and you put the money in. Wouldn't it be true that all that money would be from inheritance?
I would agree with that, Your Honor.
Well, then you're conceding what Judge Shedd asked you. Unless he said that every bill physically was given to him by his father, it's not inconsistent to say that all of the money came from inheritance, because it is your inheritance. If your father left you an automobile and after his death you sold it, you put the proceeds in there, it would be correct to say all of the money was from inheritance, is it not?
I believe, Judge Gregory, I believe you're actually much more eloquently than I am articulating
state. And I think that's a good theory, except for what your client testified to. I thought that he said that though every single one of those bills was from his father, that he didn't just take, what he did was take some money out to use for expenses, but that he never put any other money in, he never went to the bank and changed any of the money.
I would agree with Your Honor that he said he never went to the bank and exchanged money. I believe one of the points I was referring to, he does testify that he believes there was times he could have spent some of the money.
Right. So it's not his entire inheritance, but every dollar that's in there was inherited. He never added to it by his various working on cars and so forth.
Well, you see, Your Honor, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
We have the deposition testimony. Yes. So your representation to me is that that's not part of the deposition testimony, right?
No, I'm sorry, Your Honor. What I'm trying to say is, yes, my client did testify very clearly that he kept it in 10,000 stacks, and that those, he took them out of the ground and he only replaced the rubber band, and he didn't add to the money. I would agree with Your Honor on that. I'm not going to misrepresent what my client's
right.
deposition testimony said. My argument is that we can't get this fact by looking just at two pages of a deposition and say that because of that, he is testifying definitively that every single dollar of this money is the dollar that he got from his father. I would say that the deposition in its entirety, specifically the sections I was referencing, show that he is unsure of when he took money away from it, of the money being part of working on cars and stuff. And it's shown by the fact, Your Honor, that originally the amount of money was larger. Originally, the amount of money he inherited was roughly $180,000-something.
The fact that he took money away doesn't have anything to do with the money that was left. That's the point I think that Judge Motz is asking by way of a question. First of all, I think you're absolutely wrong as a matter of law that he's not bound by a specific statement made in two lines in his deposition. Of course somebody did, number one. Number two, the point is, not we could go over a chapter and verse and line by line, but doesn't your client say his father told him where to go get the money, go under the flat rock, get the money? He counted that money. It was all in $100 bills, and then he put it back in the ground. And on occasion, he would pull it up, count it, maybe replace the rubber bands. But that money that was found on the day of the raid, or whatever you want to call it, your client says all of that money, all of those $100 bills, came from his father in that original pile of money. Isn't that? Your client doesn't dispute that.
That's correct.
Mike, your client does say he took some of that money out. So in other words, it makes sense that you do the math that the inheritance may have been the money given to him when his father died that he dug out of the ground may have been close to 180 or some such thing like that because he took 33,000. But that is those facts established for purposes of summary judgment that your client's position is every dollar in that stash found in the safe came from his father, 1994. Isn't that the fact your client establishes by his testimony?
It's clear that that fact is testified to in my client's testimony, yes. And what I would say is that does not prove as a matter, even if this inconsistency is on the record in my client's testimony, it does not prove as a matter of law that whatever portion it is impossible is his father's inheritance is subjected or connected to or substantially related to drug activity. And that is my argument. I am, Your Honor, and it's partially in the interest of time, but I think the important thing here is what happened is the judge looked at what you all are looking at and said there's this huge glaring inconsistency or fact that my client testifies to which cannot be correct, which you all pointed out and I believe is correct, that it's impossible for some portion of this money, which was printed after 94, to be part of an inheritance, technical dollar-for-dollar inheritance, although I would argue could be traceable to an inheritance. However, even if that's the case, if you look at the $76,000 or so that is new bills, that is outside of the 1994 period, and you examine independently my client's working history in terms of fixing cars, the fact that he had no expenses because it was all paid for by his live-in girlfriend, and the fact that there's no long-standing criminal activity that's ever been proven even beyond probable cause to show where this extra $70,000 came from. Now, it's true, Your Honors, that a large amount of currency and not large amounts of working history can be circumstantial evidence of some drug activity. But in this case, Your Honor, you've got $70,000-something that could be earned over a roughly 10-year period. It's a very low amount of money that would have to be earned.
What do you say about the I'm calling it $9,000. What about the $9,000 that was found separately in the bureau drawer? What about that?
I believe that he testifies, and it's a question for whether the jury believes him or not, that that is the entire proceeds of a 1966 Mustang that he sold. Whether his details are specific enough as to buying it from an auctioneer for the Walser estate, fixing it up for $3,000, putting I think $3,000 into it, buying it for $1,500, and making roughly a $3,400 profit, I would argue to Your Honor that's pretty specific information that he's given. It's kept in a separate location. And in fact, Your Honor, when this money is first seized,
How specific does it have to be if he's willing to say he got that money from another source? Doesn't that create, in the jargon, does that create expression of fact? That money?
Yes, Your Honor.
Whether he has receipts, corroboration, if he's willing to state that, and that's his statement, isn't that a fact before the judge on summary judgment?
Yes, it is, Your Honor. Thank you very much. I believe my time is up.
How much money is there? Get that straight, just if you would. How much money is there? $9,000 plus what else?
We would contend it's $9,000.
Right.
Plus, in old bills, it is...
$138,900? There'll be some discrepancy. And if that's...
We believe there's $54,600 that was inherited by Mr. Bailey.
No, I'm not asking. I'm talking about the total amount of money found in the safe.
It would be the $147,900 minus the
$9,000. Thank you very much.
Okay, but I am interested in how much is an old bill?
It's 56. We would contend pre-1994 bills is 56,000. Sorry, $54,600, Your Honor. And of that, the really old bills are roughly $39,000 or so, Your Honor. It's in my brief.
What are the undisputedly bills that couldn't have been the inheritance?
I believe that's a sum total of $75,300.
Okay. Thank you very much. You have time off for rebuttal.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
May it please the Court, my name is Lynn Clower, and I represent the appellee of the United States in this matter. This is a case for a review of summary judgment determination, and I would submit that in this case, the government's evidence viewed in its entirety is sufficient to carry its burden and show that the currency, the defendant currency, was more likely than not the proceeds of drug transactions. Circumstantial evidence in that regard is sufficient, and the government need not show that the claimant, the appellant, was convicted of a crime or that the money is directly traceable to a crime.
Ms. Clower, can I ask you about the, I think that the defendant, Mr. Bailey, clearly, the government had him dead to rights on $75,000 of the money that was in the can, it was rolled up. But the government offered evidence from its own expert witness that money couldn't be in circulation for more than, 8 years or something like that. It would deteriorate. And some $54,000 of that money was in that category. So what do we do with that?
Your Honor, I would suggest that that's not exactly what the government's expert from the Federal Reserve said. He said that the average lifespan of a Federal Reserve note is 89 months. And what the appellant has tried to do with that is say that that's the expected life of a Federal Reserve note, a $100 Federal Reserve note, and those aren't the same things. If it's the average lifespan, then half of the notes are in circulation are less than 89 months old, and half of them are more than 89 months old. Doesn't mean it's the expected lifespan.
Well, how many 89 months is how many years? 7.5 years. And so how old was the oldest part of this money?
The oldest part of this money, Your Honor, was bills with a series date of 1950. There were actually only 14 bills with a series date earlier than 1977.
So how old did that make you? I'm making you do the math.
They were seized in 2005. That would have made them approximately 30 years old. Not impossible.
It sounds to me like maybe there's a tribal issue
with respect to those. Ask this, do bills deteriorate on their own? If you take money and put it aside, your expert said if I were to take money right now and put it in a lockbox in my house and I went back 100 years, it would be ashes? I thought the argument is, it didn't bother me too much, so I guess we need to get into it, that circulated bills doesn't have to do with dealing with them and handling them. Isn't that what the damage to bills come from?
I thought that too, but I don't think, is that what your expert said?
Your Honor, he really didn't get into detail about that. He didn't talk about it. He said the average lifespan is 89 months, you know, and that would include bills that are widely circulated as well as those that, as well as bills that are not
widely
circulated.
Maybe you didn't ask the right question.
I don't.
You ever see the show called Pawn Stars? People bring in money that, my gosh, is 150 years old. I don't have much money, but I have a couple dollars given to me when I was younger that are, I hate to say this, you give my age, but they say over 40 years old, 50 years old. They aren't deteriorating. You can take it right now. Most of those are, they aren't reserve notes, by the way. They're older than that, silver certificates. They don't deteriorate. I mean, is your expert's testimony that if you put money aside, that in a certain amount of money, I mean a reasonable amount, 50 years, 100 years, they'll just dissolve?
No, Your Honor, I don't. And he doesn't speak to that, and I don't think that's fair.
But the question remains, we don't have any evidence presented by the government here that this man was doing any drug dealing. How many years ago did you say these old bills were?
About a dozen predate the 1977 series bills.
So how many years old are they?
So they are
65.
30 years old.
So it's sort of consistent with his grandfather put them in the ground and then gave them to his father, and his father gave them.
In this case, you don't have evidence of drug dealing at all other than, what, $90, $120? It's kind of absurd, and you don't have anything that matches the kind of money you're trying to forfeit.
No, Your Honor, we don't, but I don't think that when you look at the totality of the circumstances.
I'm looking at the totality.
We're asking you to tell us about the totality that we
the totality of the evidence in this case is that Mr. Bailey had a history of drug sales from at least 2001.
History of drug sales?
Continuing into 2005.
What is that history? What's the evidence?
The evidence, Your Honor, would be that in May of 2001, when the Davidson County Sheriff's Office investigated, they did a controlled purchase of prescription drugs from Mr. Bailey. They executed a search warrant at his house, at which time they found 25 prescription drug tablets and about 4.5 pounds of marijuana, as well as a large sum of currency to which a dog alerted. They found packaging materials. They found digital scales. And 2004 and 2005, they were getting reports from citizens and informants that he was dealing marijuana and prescription drugs.
That's your evidence? That's not admissible evidence, is it?
Well, Your Honor.
If someone told you, neighbors were telling you, that wouldn't be admissible, would it?
That in and of itself might not be, but they went on to investigate. They conducted an additional controlled buy of prescription drugs.
For $30?
Yes, sir.
$30, and the other, the 2001 result that he won that case, didn't he?
There was settlement in the forfeiture case, Your Honor.
In the forfeiture case, $20,000 went to pay his bill, correct?
Yes, sir.
Well, that means I won because you're settling my debt, and then some you gave to his girlfriend, correct? Right?
Yes, sir.
And the other went back to him, and I think about $300 in cost. So he won that case completely. Am I correct?
Your Honor, I'm sure he would characterize it as a win.
I don't see how you could have it. You owe me $20,000 of my debt. I won that. How else would you characterize that?
That may be, but it doesn't change the underlying facts that led to that seizure.
Right. The underlying fact is you have one transaction then, one transaction in 2005, and now you're going to try to seize $140,000-some. And here's another thing, this. What is your evidence of conspicuous consumption?
There isn't evidence of conspicuous consumption.
Not $1. You don't have a Mercedes in the driveway, a 19th century urn or something in the living room. That's what normally net worth reconstruction is. You find conspicuous consumption that a person couldn't have these assets. Is $100,000 over what period of time?
I don't know exactly which way that comes.
Well, I don't know either, but I know one thing.
He keeps the 147 in the business question.
No, but you start off with $54,000 is definitely, let's say, his. So what you're left, well, not definitely, but we still argue about the bill. Let's assume, for the sake of argument, $54,000 is inherited. So then you're left with about $100,000, give or take, that he could not have earned over what period of time? What's the period of time? This, how old was the man?
$75,000 couldn't have been inherited.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Okay, $75,000. What period of time are you saying he couldn't have earned that?
Your Honor, the fact is he testified that none of that money was from his earnings. I mean, that
no, he did. He said he made about $12,000 a year.
He did testify that he made some
taxes.
Money.
He admits he didn't pay taxes, so you don't even deduct taxes from that. So you tell me you have 20 years to earn $12,000 a year. You can't save $75,000? It's not even consistent with, that's absurd.
That's not what he said, though, was it?
No, Your Honor.
He didn't say he took any of those earnings and put in that money in the ground. His testimony was that was from his daddy, Gary.
Well, we know that's not correct then. So he had to have some source, and the source is his money. He said he had $12,000 income. Is that correct?
He testified that he made some money fixing up cars, but he also clearly said that none of the money that was seized represented money from working.
Except maybe that $9,000.
Except perhaps the $9,000. And as to that, he didn't offer any corroboration in terms of statements from the buyer or seller of the vehicle.
Well, what
or documentary.
I guess I'm troubled with is, on one hand, he says all the money is the inheritance. And we know the government proved that not all of the money was inheritance. $75,000 wasn't the inheritance. Now, what I'm left is, do we have a triable issue with respect to the other? We have... in determining that issue, we have his statement, his inconsistent statement, his statement that it was all an inheritance. That the district court can look at and say, well, you lied about some of it being an inheritance, so you probably lied about it all being an inheritance. But we also have the fact that some of those bills are really, really old. So they look like inheritance. And we don't have any conspicuous spending, and we don't have a lot of evidence of getting money from drug dealers. So what I'm asking you to do is explain to me why we don't have a triable issue with respect to the non-$75,000.
Your Honor, what we're left with, I think, is conflicting versions of the truth from the claimant. And this court has said that a genuine issue of material fact.
And that's what I thought originally. But this is a pretty unsophisticated person, what the government calls an unsophisticated person, and what ordinary people call poor people, who I'm not sure was, I'm not sure what we're to do with it, because the government's own expert comes in with this business about money deteriorating, and we have this really old money.
Your Honor.
And we also have the girlfriend who talks about the inheritance. So we have a separate witness talking about the inheritance.
The girlfriend's testimony in that regard is really very limited and corroborates
it
only
is.
To a small extent.
It is.
She testifies that she saw him get the money and she saw it out of the ground once.
Right. But she's not stuck with every penny was, her testimony doesn't go to that. I mean, it's all fair game for the government to put forth if this would go back. Look, this guy was not credible. And I'm not, now that I know that this man is died, I'm not sure how he ever proves this case.
I read her deposition as best I could. Does she suggest he added money to the inheritance fund?
No, Your Honor,
she
I don't
just
think
says she's
so.
Seen him occasionally, at least on one occasion, take it out and count it.
That's correct,
But she doesn't say, she does not contradict his story that every bit of that money was inheritance, does she?
She does not, Your Honor.
Tell me, what is the... I'm thinking about this currency and the circulation. What does the government think that means, this average lifespan? What does that mean in your case?
Your Honor, I think...
What does it mean?
It means that the average life of a bill...
I know what it means, but what value is it to the government? The case is what I'm trying to figure. Because if he's saying that the average lifespan is 7.5 years, didn't you say some of those bills were from 1950?
That's true, Your Honor.
So he was telling a lie? I mean...
No, Your Honor, I don't think it's of
But you missed my point. What is the
help.
Value of that as it impacts on this case?
Your Honor, I don't know that that fact has particular value to the government's case.
It hurts the government's case. But he could say that I don't think it has particular impact to my case that I said that every dollar was inherited. But it comes to us with this various testimony. We can't just decide to discard testimony the government thinks is not worthwhile or discard testimony that he thinks is not worthwhile, can we?
No, but Your Honor, the issue in this case was the only evidence that the appellant, that Mr. Bailey, proffered was, this money is my inheritance. It's all my inheritance. Every bit of it came from my daddy in 1994. That, because clearly that was not
that's
true.
That's wrong. The government proved that's a lie. But the government has to, on summary judgment, the government certainly has to prove that there's no material fact with respect to the other part, too, doesn't it? You can't just say, just prove he showed a lie with respect to one part. I mean,
well,
tell me a theory
really
by which that
sole,
would work.
This is really the sole explanation that Mr. Bailey gave for where this money
came
from.
Is there any basis that he said he put any other money in there? Is there any basis in the record to say that money came from anywhere other than the inheritance?
No, Your Honor.
Did he
very
say
clear.
He took any of his money from his potential legal dealings, selling cars and stuff, and put in there?
No, Your Honor. In fact, he's explicit that it didn't include that money.
So how then for summary judgment, it's established that there's no other way that money could be there other than from something he won't tell us about. It can't come from anything he tells us, and he says only inherited. So where is there any factual basis to take that any of that money came from anything legal, the extra part?
Your Honor, I agree. I mean, you can only speculate that it came from someplace legitimate and,
well,
you know.
Well, he says it all came from a legitimate source, inheritance, right? Government proved that the $75,000 did not come from inheritance. I think that the government's probably entitled to summary judgment with respect to $75,000. It's unclear to me is where is the government's evidence that the $54,000 and the $9,000 beyond a reasonable fact. Isn't there not a dispute as to that? Because as Judge Shedd has just pointed out, he said that it all came, all the $54,000 came from inheritance, and he offered an explanation, a legitimate explanation for the $9,000.
And I think where that left the court was with no plausible explanation, no evidence such that a reasonable jury could find a verdict for him, because he clearly said what he said about that currency.
Isn't it that he had inheritance, he had legitimate income, and he had drug income. That's what the court found from the fact. The explanation for the money in the ground, his explanation is inheritance. There's not any evidence in the record that one cent of that money in the ground came from legitimate work. I'm talking about the extra incremental part. Came from anything legitimate.
Except his testimony.
No, it's not his.
And the girl's testimony that it was an inheritance.
No. I'm talking about the incremental amount.
The 54,000. Oh, the 9,000.
No, I'm talking about the 1990 post 1994 bit.
The 75.
Yeah, whatever that number.
Yeah, that's gone.
The money the money that's pre 1994, and the money that's post 1994, is clearly under these facts mingled drug and other money made, but it's mingled money. Because there's no explanation for the post-1994 money on this record other than drug dealing. Isn't that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor. There's no explanation for it, and there's no way other than speculating based on the age of the bills as to what portion of it might be inheritance versus drug income or something else.
So what you're missing, though, is you got $75,000, but the only evidence as to drug activity is just a small amount of it. Okay, so that's $200 minus the $75,000 you're entitled to. So he has to have an explanation for that. You don't have any kind of activity. Normally, cases like this, you would say, there's evidence that a person at this level in this many months, this much cocaine or marijuana, therefore. But here you only have discrete sales of maybe two times.
Sometimes,
The government, I agree with counsel, this is a heavy hand. The government is taking money from an individual, one of our protected rights in America, and you would say, I found you had one transaction. Now, you have to explain where all of your money comes from. Otherwise, all the money you have belongs to us. Isn't that a little absurd?
No, that's not this case.
This
is not Borromeo, where there was clear evidence that the individual had legitimate income and that the assets they were trying to seize included property that may have been purchased with that legitimate income. You know, this court has always has held that the totality of the evidence has to be considered, and that circumstantial evidence is sufficient. There's not a requirement that the government trace money to specific drug transactions. And in fact, in highway interdiction cases, that's typically the case. We have circumstantial evidence that money is drug proceeds based on...
If he had testified that, yes, I had some money from inheritance, and yes, I had legitimate income from selling cars, and I put some of that in the background, in the ground, then that might create a legitimate fact as how much of that money was valid money.
This might be a different case than
you. He doesn't say that.
That's
but
correct.
He did put some in the ground. We know that.
But he denied it.
It doesn't matter. We know as a matter, you can't have it both ways. If you're saying it proved that he lied, it was all inheritance, the converse is also, you can't let logic go out the door. Then the other logic is he did put money in there. Now the question is, what was that money? And you only have two discrete drug transactions to prove that part that he put in was drugs. And he testified that he did have an income, and you have no conspicuous consumption. I've never seen anything, nothing at all, not even a watch. Some people have a Rolex or something, nothing.
Let me ask you, I'll
ask you the question. I want to respond.
Your Honor, you're correct that there was no conspicuous consumption and that the actual drugs transactions that the law enforcement engaged in with Mr. Bailey through the undercover buys and controlled purchases were limited in quantity. That's true.
Why isn't there a factual dispute on the $9,000?
Your Honor, the only thing Mr. Bailey offered in that regard was his own self-serving, uncorroborated testimony. Well,
that's plenty enough for summary judgment purposes, isn't it? You don't have to have a corroborated statement. It can be self-serving. Almost every statement everybody makes in a case on their side is self-serving. If he says that $9,000 came from, he says, which he did, it came from sale of a car, why doesn't that create a factual dispute for the jury?
Your Honor, I think that's a close question, but if that were the case, then simply denying drug trafficking or denying any involvement in drug trafficking would also create an issue of fact. But, you know, self-serving denial.
Well, it would. If you were saying that he was dealing in drugs and he denied a summary judgment, according to the burden of proof and what it is, I might do that. But on this, he explains where the money came from. You just told me that had he said he'd taken some what he claims to be legitimate money and said he'd put it in the ground, there would be some kind of factual dispute. This is basically the same thing. He says that $9,000 came from a legitimate source. Seems to me that creates a factual question. You don't think so?
Your Honor, it's certainly a much closer question.
Okay.
Uncorroborated. Thank you, Your Honor. I urge the court to affirm.
Your Honor, I'd really like to deal with one discrete point in this rebuttal, and that is the fact that it's not enough that the government can prove that Mr. Bailey was not telling the truth about where that $72,000 came from. They must prove, as a matter of law, that there's no conflict in evidence that it's substantially connected to drug activity. And Your Honor actually said it very, very well just now. isn't it true that if Mr. Bailey denied any involvement with drug activity and drug trafficking, and or there's some evidence that would show that he was not involved in drug activity or drug trafficking, that there would be a genuine issue of material fact as to whether the government has proven, for summary judgment purposes, with all evidence viewed in the favor of Mr. Bailey, that he has a substantial connection to drug activity. Well, when we look at what we have here, we have specific denials on the record in his deposition of any drug activity. He says, I never sold marijuana. I never sold pills. We also have the fact that the first seizure, roughly 97% of the money seized is returned to him. There's a dismissal of all criminal charges against him, and he's never convicted or pleads guilty to any crime. In the second incident involving the $120 worth of pills, there's no conviction, there's no guilty plea, there's no prosecution. My question, or my point to the court is, isn't this all evidence that there is no substantial connection from whatever source this extra $72,000 is from? Isn't this proof that the government has not met its burden of proving, as a matter of law, that $72,000 comes from drug money? I think it's dangerous to assume that just because we don't have an explanation or enough facts on the record and he didn't testify properly as to his legitimate source of income, and he said that it wasn't. He said that it was something that it clearly couldn't be. Okay, just because that happened, that doesn't alleviate the government's burden of proof of still proving that that money is traceable to criminal activity. Frankly, in common terms, you don't
Let me ask you a question.
Yes, sir.
Just assume for a second that a court's finding that he was involved or that the money involved was drug connected to drug activity. Just assume that for a second. Then under those facts, he offers no triable fact evidence that the money in the ground, the new money in the ground, came from anywhere but drug activities, does he? Does he offer any other explanation for it under his testimony?
He doesn't, because he contradicts it in a specific statement.
No. Does he ever say anywhere that he put money in the ground?
And that's what I'm trying to answer, Your Honor. You're correct. He never says he put money in the ground.
He would have to offer positive proof. If it was established, you say it wasn't, but I'm just saying assume that so we can focus on the second part, that there's drug activity involved. The record is completely devoid of any fact to establish that the new money in the ground came from anything other than drug activity.
And here's where I would respectfully...
Isn't that correct?
I would respectfully disagree, Your Honor, and I would say it's not.
Tell me why, based on a fact in the record.
Yes, Your Honor. What I would say is that there are facts in the record that he testifies to as to income. You are correct that he then makes a statement that he didn't take any of that income that he made and didn't put it in the ground. And the only reason I say I don't think it's correct is just because he makes a statement which contradicts other evidence of income doesn't mean, as a matter of law, there's no evidence of other income.
No, I think you're wrong about that. Because he could have taken that legitimate income. He could have hidden that somewhere else. He didn't have to spend it. It's not a question that all of that money has to be accounted for. It's a question of what factual basis there is that the money in the ground, that new money in the ground, is on this record can come from anything other than drug activity. On your client's own testimony, it cannot.
Well,
now, by the way, what happened to I'm allowing that maybe he had legitimate income, but that doesn't mean that was buried in the ground. He says it was not. We can't create facts for your client.
I agree that if you make the assumption that the government has met its burden, that
right.
This is criminal activity.
Right.
And you exclude the fact that the other income that we agree he could have made, because he said he didn't put it in the ground.
There's no fact.
If those two things happen, then you're correct. I don't think there's any way around it.
As to the second part, that's the fact for this record. You cannot say for this record that he took any of that legitimate income and put in the ground, because he says he did not do that.
And I understand.
You can't create a fact for him.
But Your Honor, what I would say is, there are parts of the record where he testifies much more waveringly as to whether or not he interacted with that money in the ground and says things like, I don't really remember. I would think at a real trial if he was alive.
I really don't remember does not offset a factual statement that he didn't do. That's just established law.
Thank you, Your Honor.
But then the fact would also be established that he didn't put any drug money in there either.
I would agree.
Wouldn't it?
I would agree with Your Honor.
Right. Just the contrary, the corollary of that is that he didn't put drug money in either. The fact is, we know he put money in. So the question is, under this record, what are the possible sources? One, as Judge Shedd said, is drugs. Well, we know that's about $120 based on this record. The other possibility is other funds that he had is income. That's about $12,000 per year. So when you look at the weight of it, was because we know he put something in there. That's to say, well, if he put something in, it must have been all drugs. But the only evidence of drugs is about $200.
And that's what I'm trying to suggest, Your Honor, is that the evidence of income in the record can be used because we know money was added to it.
Right.
And the evidence of income can be used as a material fact to show that it wasn't drug money. That's what I'm trying to argue.
I know, but your client doesn't say that. Your client would say that you're calling him a liar. That's what your client would say. And the judge, we can't speculate about all that. What's the fact in front of the court is that, and by the way, the $120, we don't know that's all the money there was. We don't know all the money there was. And quite frankly, if we're going to speculate, which we shouldn't do and we won't do for the purpose of this record, doesn't the proper speculation be that that was drug money and your client, when he got caught, instead of letting them think that might be some drug money in the ground, just claimed there was no drug money? Isn't that what most likely happened if we were to go there?
I think the problem here, Your Honor, is he's not even paid the $120. He's traded goods. He's never given cash for drugs, ever, that they can prove. So he can't turn a rusted-out car or whatever he's traded.
He never really made any income either. He never filed any income.
Well, he did testify that he
sold
cars for
that profit. Was just, as I read the record, sort of subsistence living.
He just didn't have any need to pay money because he was basically being taken care of by his girlfriend. He had nothing to spend on.
Why wouldn't a person in your client's position go, I got money buried in the ground, some for my daddy, and some I bury out there as I make money along and along. I don't pay income tax. But why wouldn't you say that?
I don't know the answer.
Maybe because he has no burden.
That was what I would argue.
Maybe because he won't hide drug proceeds.
Yeah, but the law is that he has no burden. The other is a speculation. Correct.
Especially on summary judgment.
But the law is you deal with facts in the record. Facts in the record.
Can I ask you, how does this case go? If we send it back, what happens?
I believe what will happen is a combination of his son, who was present for a lot of this, and his girlfriend would testify along with the deposition testimony and using the bills themselves and basically force the government to meet their burden, much like many criminal cases are tried.
Right, to a jury or to a judge?
I believe we requested a jury trial, Your Honor. So I believe it would be tried to a jury.
Do we have other questions? No. Thank you.
Thank you all very much.
We will